Hey, welcome to our Exercise and Self-Loathing, Legends of Philadelphia. These are your hosts, Johnny Zito and his best friend, Tony Trove. I'm Brian Bierman, helping out on engineering duties. You might be asking, why do these guys do this to themselves? Well, in addition to being Philadelphia natives, Tony Trove and Johnny Zito have a little t-shirt business, South Fellini, that focuses on Philly culture and in-jokes. Lots of times, customers will ask us, what are you doing in my home? Or they want to know our favorite Boys to Men song. You spelled boys with an S, Zito.
That was autocorrect. Like it must have been an autocorrect. I would never do that.
That's a huge problem.
Tell everybody I spelled two right, though.
You did, yeah. But it's boys with a Z, as everyone
Look,
knows.
I know that. Zito knows that.
And you got to stop referring yourself in third person. I didn't want to bring this up, but... So we decided to start this podcast as an easy explainer for new Philadelphians and a refresher for the old heads. The city fascinates and excites us, so we're hoping to share that with you.
This is hands down the worst intro ever.
No, I don't know. That time we tried to all read it at the same time was pretty awful.
That was the worst.
That was memorable, though.
Yeah, people will forget this one. It'll sink into obscurity.
It had heart. End of the Road. And that's our collective favorite Boys to Men song.
It's universally understood.
I had some friends move to South Philly and didn't know why. There's Boys to Men Boulevard or whatever, so on Broad Street, and it seemed very random to them. And I guess if you don't realize that they're part of the cultural thread of Philadelphia, it would seem.
It seems very random. Yeah.
It seems very random. It seems right. Like what? Oh, they were huge in the 90s. It was on VH1, but it's like, you know, as a Philadelphian, you're like, oh, they're just the greatest R&B act to come out of the city since,
part of the tapestry.
Some of the 70s, maybe. Tapestry, yeah.
Trove used to tell people that we were one of the bands,
the white guy band that in Motown Philly. They show like all the other groups that are like they show all the other like groups that were like in the same label, and there's like one white group, and they point at the camera, and I used to tell people that we were in that group.
that was us. Do you know the white people from Boys to Men video? That was
us.
They're like New Energy or something like that. I can't. Something like that. That was a good one. That was a good one.
Yeah. That's a good video, too. They're out in front of Geno Steaks dancing. It's a good time.
They hit so many locations. I would love to know about the. I would love to know somebody who worked on that video because they hit every place in the city. I wonder how long they got around shooting that on film, maybe, and ran around town doing that.
I love the Motown Philly video, though. It's got appearances all over the town, all over the city.
Questlove, a young Questlove, isn't it?
Yes, that's true. And I guess, and then there's the shot outside of Geno Steaks where they dance in front of all of that, all the neon signs, the giant neon cheesesteak out there, and let everybody know they're from Philly. Otherwise, how would you know?
How would you know? Except for the song Motown Philly.
Right. Which I guess is a pretty good segue to today's topic. We're going to talk about signage. We're going to talk about neon signs around Philadelphia. The city is full of great signage. In fact, some of Philly's most famous locations are better known for their big neon lights than what they actually sell. These antiquated lettered marquees and neon signs that adorn several of the city's historic buildings are remnants of a bygone era. So today we're going to take a look back at five signs, mostly neon, some not, that light the way to happier days.
Wow.
Neon. It's a gas.
That's so dumb.
Let's just turn it off now. Let's just end it now.
Everyone else did. Everyone else just clicked.
Let's wrap it up.
They were like, I liked it better when they were talking about Boys to Men.
I was thinking that too. I was like, last week it was like the 93 Phillies, like literally nothing more popular than that. And then now it's like weird signs we like.
We do one for them and one for us.
One for them, one for us.
Right,
one
right.
One for us. Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have a, I know Trove does, you have a fascination with neon lights and neon light history. You've done a little collecting. We have some at the store.
Well, you know, I mean, I guess we'll talk about this later. Zito and I worked on a music video years ago for Mr. Wives. And from the video, where did you, like, this, the dairy bar on the Black Horse Pike? And the DP, Matt, wanted a bunch of neons and sent us on a quest to, like, track down neons and rent them. Like, what, the guy from, like, what, like Show and Tell, like, is a neon collector because, or the other strip joint on Delaware Avenue.
That makes sense.
Because some, like all neons, like, oh yeah, all strip joints use neons.
Yeah.
We went to the museum, like the guy who has the museum.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about him too.
Yeah, yeah, and then I ended up renting him from Ratface, the famous production designer in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And we broke them, and then we had to pay for them. So we learned a lot about neon.
Did you sniff the gas when you broke it?
No. We had them in a truck, and we even, like, put them, like, separate. We put them up front instead of with all the truck with all this crap in
it. Zito had to sit in the back, and the neon had a seatbelt on.
Yes.
The neon was, like, in a towel, like, in a very protective towel and bubble wrap, and we carried it the whole time, and then we time to use it, and it was broken. It was, like, the kind that you can, like, outline a window with. They were, like, the long rods.
Yeah.
And then we paid for them, and we was like, wow, neons are damn, they're expensive.
Can't eat this month. Sorry, kids. We broke a neon flamingo. It was priceless.
I think we ended up using my wife's plastic ice cream, giant ice cream sign.
We did.
Video
instead. Yeah. Yeah.
We'll link to it. It's a fun video.
One or two of those neons still worked. I think there was one shaped like a parrot, if I remember. Maybe,
yeah.
Maybe a bird of some sort.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yes, you're right.
Some of them made it. Some of them made it back. We didn't wreck them all.
No, but you know, it makes you appreciate it if you're paying for them.
It's true. My interest in neon has always come from Philadelphia architecture specifically. When we were in high school, college, there was like a website called Philadelphia Skyscraper, and it had all of this information, or Philly Skyscraper, something like that, and it had all this information.
It was a message board.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, yeah, I say a website, but it was more of a message board. And it was pretty much a place where people could give the history of certain buildings. And the PSFS was getting renovated at the time, and I think turned into a hotel, and that was like what everyone was talking about, and keeping the sign or not, because it's the Lowe's Hotel. Why do they need a PSFS sign? But it's part of the city. It's part of the skyline. It's part of the what it feels like to live in Philadelphia and have these generations of architecture and design piled on top of one another, you know?
Now it's in Zito's basement.
Broken.
I remember, like, the city paper, or maybe I think it was city paper, they asked people to write in to, like, what does PSFS stand for? And, like, have everyone, like, submitted, like, funny answers. And I remember one of them was, Philadelphia smells fine sometimes. I always say
also
that.
Accurate.
I always say it to myself when I see this sign.
That's a good one. And then most recently, yeah. I mean, we were all excited, or at South Fellini, we were all excited when the Divine Lorraine sign came back on a year or two ago. That was a big deal to see something like that restored.
We here at South Fellini. We were.
We were. We love it.
We popped some champagne.
I think we went to go see it.
I poured it on Zito. Like spring break. So
yeah.
It was different. Different time.
It's a different time.
Spring break. Different time.
And I'm not sure. I mean, Bierman, you're going to have to tell me because you've lived in several different neighborhoods around the city. But, like, I think of them as also like a South Philly kind of thing.
A vagabond.
A vagabond. A carpetbagger is really what I was going to call you.
I ride the rails to different parts of Philadelphia.
But I don't know that neon signs are a part of all corner stores or all businesses all over the city. I just know that, like, on even as a kid on Passyunk Avenue, even the cheese shop had its own neon sign. It was just like the street glows, you know?
It's fancy.
Yeah.
And South Fellini has a South Fellini neon sign, but no one can see it now.
No one can see it. No one may look at it.
Yeah. But you do have
it. We have that sign, and we have the very open, super closed sign that's in semi-retirement, But it'll be back. You watch out.
You wait and see.
You wait and see. It's coming back.
So the style of signs we're talking about today are a type of futuristic architecture influenced by car culture, jets, space travel, and the atomic age. It's very like 50s, 60s. This style originated in Southern California with the streamlined modern architecture of the 1930s and was popular nationwide from roughly 1945 to the early 1970s. Features of these signs include curvaceous geometric shapes, the bold use of glass, steel, and neon. Yeah, some of them are sexy. I said it.
Voluptuous.
Botticelli-esque. These stylistic conventions represent American society's fascination with the space age themes and marketing emphasis on futuristic designs. New. These signs became less valued as time passed, and many in this style have been lost or destroyed. Some examples have persevered, though, and you can find them in or around Broad Street, mostly.
Destroyed.
I mean, Trove said it. They're very expensive to maintain.
Neon, you have to love it.
Do you have to refill it, like, with gas every so many time?
No, but they're finicky, you know, and they're definitely they're fragile.
It's a bunch of glass bent at weird shapes.
Yeah, and they're, you know, like, we're talking about, like, how many businesses have them. You know, there are, like, these, like, generic ones, just say, like, hot dogs or whatever, that are around. It's the custom ones that are, like, truly special.
Yeah.
But I guess that's why there are so many around, because there are just like, hey, we got hoagies.
You know? Long hot's here.
Long hot's here.
If that blinked, it'd be a really good sign.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fancy. If you have a neon sign, that's automatically you're fancy.
You're fancy.
I mean, we take for granted some of the ones that are around now, like the one outside the Reading Terminal has only recently been restored in like the last like 30
that's
years.
Right.
It sat in the basement of the Reading Terminal for years because it had just like been broken so many times. The Reading Terminal wasn't as popular, didn't have the money flowing into.
You think we're made of neon signs? We can't afford this.
Yeah. So it's cool to see some of these things survive or be restored.
It's crazy, like you were talking, Trove, like people collect them and stuff. Like, I don't know, it's not something I ever thought of, but it's like, of course people collect those.
Industrial collecting and. I mean, I have the Texas Wiener sign.
Yeah.
When they closed, I was like, I went and took
you
that.
You just put a big target on your back, bro.
He's got it. No, there's some industrial commercial things that you don't really want to see truly ever go away, you know? It's like remnants of another time.
This isn't neon, but the sign I love is on the Litt Brothers building. It says hats trimmed free of charge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like built into the, it's like back in the day when people, it's just like, yeah, I want my hat trimmed and no, I'm not paying for it. Also, fun fact, that was the name of your guys' rap group from the Motown Philly video, the Litt Brothers, right?
Litt Brothers. Yeah. And our hit song, Hats Trimmed for Free.
Yeah.
Trimmed for free.
Hit, very loosely the definition of hit, but yeah, sure. Hat, it's hat trimmed parentheses free of charge.
Man,
it was huge, kids. There was a dance and all. Look it up.
Look it up. Look it up.
Look it up. Look it up.
That's really funny. Before we get into this, most of the information in this episode came from a BillyPenn.com article by Dania Henninger and a Hidden City interview conducted by Nathaniel Popkin. So usually we get all of our information from Wiki, but this one is so specific to the city we had to rely on local journalists. Thanks, guys, for your work.
Wikipedia doesn't have it.
No, we're way off the home base here.
When are we going to start editing Wikipedia articles? And by we, I mean you, Trove.
There's got to be somebody listening who has a membership to Wikipedia or is a trusted editor. Please make these changes for us. That's all we're saying.
Yeah, just make a Philly neon sign Wikipedia page.
Yeah,
along with our Legends of Philadelphia Wikipedia page,
and maybe just a like a footnote about Litt Brothers and Trove and my rap career.
where you can get. They still have a bunch of records still in their basement, so they're still available.
Yep. Yep.
No CODs though.
No CODs. Okay, our first sign, our first neon sign, isn't a neon sign at all. It's
what?
Swerve.
Whoa.
It's a gas.
People are turning us off. The neon sign fans, or they just turn us off.
The neon community. Yeah.
This one is more in the style of the era. It's the Bambi's Cleaners sign on Broad and Porter. This black backlit plastic sign is a cheery color in a cheery colorful font, probably trademark infringing. It features the Disney fawn and has some flair, but this it's masking an otherwise monolithic corner building, which is just like plain brick on both sides and almost no windows.
Dry cleaners, right?
Yeah. You might ask yourself, how did the founder Tom Petrucci get away with using Bambi's likeness to advertise his dry cleaning business without being sued out of existence by Disney? I guess maybe because it was the 1950s when he first opened the business and the commercial copyright was less of an issue. There was no internet to find him on. Petrucci died in 1987, and the business was sold and is still operating with the adorable fawn still welcoming all who pass through its doors. So it's not a neon sign, but it is like it's emblematic of this era and what everyone was trying to achieve with the neon. You know, like if this was the cheap version of that.
It was like a, would you say it was a googie?
Yeah, I guess I would say it was a googie, a word that you explained to me this week.
And explain that word?
It's like a style of sign and architecture. It's like very Jetsons looking, is the best way to describe it.
When you look, like the font is very like 60s.
Yeah, like swinging 60s kind of
thing. A squivel, martinis.
Yeah, you know, and honestly, when we were kids, like really young, there was a lot of this stuff still kind of around, but it was all run down.
Yeah.
You know, there's like just few examples of it left, and it's funny because Bambi's is just definitely true South Philly mid-century.
It's definitely the one flaunting it the most. Growing up, there were many businesses that used copyright and characters in their corner store signs.
Sure, yeah.
I love them. I absolutely love these knockoff versions.
Bootlegs.
I love them, and I love that Bambi's is still going just because it's like a big middle finger to Disney and copyright law in general. I just love it. I love it.
Yeah, it's great. It's huge. We'll post a picture of it, but it's great. Great sign. 8 out of 10.
Yeah, 8 out of 10. We should rate them. We're gonna keep moving. We're gonna head north on South Broad Street and take a stop at the Melrose Diner. The vintage sign on the side of the building remains as kitschy as ever. It says Melrose Diner in neon with a clock in the shape of a coffee mug. Its two hands are a fork and a knife, promising to take you back to an earlier time. The Melrose opened in 1956 on this triangle drawn by 15th and Snyder and Paschunk, the way they kind of all intersect, and it still stays open no matter where those utensils are pointing. But it hasn't always been the case.
Always open.
Always open. That wasn't always the case, though. In the 80s and 90s, the Melrose sign had fallen into disrepair, and the building itself turned dark. I do remember driving by there lots of times in the 90s, and it did look abandoned. There was no exterior lighting or anything like that, and it has a big, like, long blank wall as well. So when that neon light isn't on, it's just like it's just dead space. It's unowned, you know? Like, kind of scary.
You wouldn't know you could get croquettes at this building.
First off, I think they should bring back when you would sit with strangers.
At the Melrose?
At the Melrose. When they would make you sit and stare at strangers, you'd split the booth.
Depending
they should bring
on
that back.
Where you sit in the counter, you can still get that effect.
No, it's like it's truly the only place I've ever eaten that you go, your party goes into half a booth and someone else is there. And you're like, the table's like just big enough where it's like they're not kind of in your face, but you're definitely like forcefully sharing a booth with someone else.
I don't want that.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember like being a kid.
And like the left side smoking, the right side's not. I mean, how?
Yeah, let's bring that back.
Yeah, because you know that 10 feet.
Bring it back.
Trove, do you remember we went to the Melrose one time and our friend Joe lit up a cigar in the smoking section? and another old man in the smoking section.
Yes, and a mailed man told him to put it out.
Told him to put it out.
A cigar.
Yeah.
Wow.
What an idiot. That's
we
so
were sharing
funny.
A booth. You had to have like four people if you didn't want to share a booth.
Smoking section. Yeah. Bring it back. And bring back the theme song.
Oh, yeah. The theme song is definitely worth it. Owner Michael Petrogiannis bragged about his new neon additions when he took over. Quote, when you would drive up and down Pashunk or Snyder at night, it looked dark and it looked like the place was closed. Now it's nice and bright and inviting, end quote. And if you do visit out there, the neon on the outside and the restored neon sign, that is all additions from when Michael bought the place, I think like in 2013, and they did some renovating there. And then last year, there was a fire there, and the place was closed down for a while, and they had to replace all of that stuff on the front of the building, all that neon and the canopy and stuff. And I live around the corner, so I ran down, as you do, when there's a big fire, and you want to...
Zito had no pants on, no shoes. He was like, what? Melrose on fire?
As any newsy South Philadelphian, I ran out my bathrobe.
There were old women and old men.
What's going on over here? What you doing over here? What is going on?
People were so upset. There were people making the sign of the cross. There were people crying. There were people acting like it was 9/11. It was bad.
Stop it.
I swear. There was a lady clutching her rosary crying as the Melrose like lightly burned. It was a big deal to them.
I understand.
I heard about it like 5 minutes after it was on fire. Like multiple people were like texting me.
The pretzel factory caught fire. I got people text me. LaRose's had a fire. I got a text. People definitely keep me in the loop for certain establishments, and I definitely got a lot of messages. Yeah, they know where my stomping ground.
They know where you like to eat, yeah.
And then they fixed it all up, right? It's all different now inside. And they also, I didn't want to bring this up, but they got rid of the honey mustard they used to have, and
it's
not
the
as
same.
Good anymore. It's not the same. I'll do my solo podcast is all about honey mustard. You can download it on iTunes.
No other mustards. You don't do anything about it?
No other mustards. That's what it's called. There's one episode so far.
There's no other mustards. I don't know. Do you guys want to take this opportunity to mention the Argan Diner sign, which is not a neon, but
great
possibly
sign,
a googie.
Great sign. Great French onion soup.
Yeah. The great burgers. They have the martini glass in on their sign.
Right? They have their own bar. Yeah. They have their own bar. And the sign says...
Fresh baked goods.
Fresh baked goods on the premises,
Yeah, they redid their sign a few years ago, too. They made it look exactly how it was, but it's definitely been refurbished since we were kids. It was more yellow back in the day, right? Now it has like a red...
It's giant, too.
Yeah, oh, it's massive.
I mean, Penrose has like a giant one of these signs as well. Like I guess it's because it's a diner, they're trying to pull you off the highway.
You can see it from space.
You see it from space.
We have a sticker.
And we have a sticker.
Plug. We have a sticker.
A French onion soup sticker.
Similar to Oregon Diner, but not. It's not the same. It's similar, maybe, but you'd be wrong.
It's part of my soup appreciation sticker line.
Yeah. Ever expanding.
Soup enthusiast, Tony Joe.
One of many. One of many. You know, South Philly was almost a soup store. Don't forget. Soup and cheese, soup and grilled cheese. It might still be.
It might still be. You never know.
You never know. Things change on the dime around here.
Okay, we're gonna move up the block. We're gonna talk about our first actual true neon, fully neon sign, not just a clock pretending to be
finally,
a neon
sign. Finally, people are like about time.
We're gonna talk about the hidden gem.
Get to the gas.
We're gonna talk about the hidden gem outside Meglio's furs next. I don't know if people really know this one. It's mostly overshadowed by a tree.
It's that abandoned building that's been abandoned for like how many years?
At
like
least
decades now?
Yeah, at least 20. Yeah. It was open in the 90s. I remember it being open.
I don't think so. Really?
Yeah, I definitely remember.
It's been closed since the 60s. Those mannequins are so old.
No, those signs, when somebody photoshopped our Legends of Philadelphia heads on the sign, those are 80s celebrities. Those are 80s photos. So it definitely was open till the 80s. And I swear to God, I remember driving riding my bike by there a bunch of times and seeing people inside. But I think it closed around the year 2000. But nobody knows for sure because it was one of those places that wasn't open every day anyway.
Oh, like they did business, but it wasn't open to the public.
Yeah, kinda. Yeah.
I'm fascinated.
When I put out like a teaser when we had the mannequin for Mannequin, I was like, "Hey, we have the most famous mannequin in the world," and Jackie from Amelie's Bark Shop asked me if we had the mannequin from the fur place, and I was like, "No, from the movie, like that's the one." And she was like, "Ah," and she was like disappointed that.
I mean, we could probably break into it.
I've inquired to get it.
The building that houses Salvatore Meglio furs entered the Philadelphia Tax Registry back in 1957, and the neon sign that spotlights it appears to date from a similar era. The mannequins that still haunt the windows now of the shuttered shop appear to have been placed there in a more recent time, probably the late 1980s. We mentioned this one because it's still in pretty bad shape, but the building appears to be being worked on right now. So hopefully it'll remain after the renovations, but if not, we just wanted to give it some attention. I did find a change.org petition to save the fur neon sign, but only about 48 people have signed it.
Only 40 people care.
But if you live in that area and you're walking your dog or riding your bike.
Jay Zito. JP Zito.
John PZ.
Jay the Z. Ito.
Right.
The Lit Brothers.
The Lit Brothers.
Yeah, I'm fascinated. Every time I walk by, I like look in there and I always think, and you know what? I'm not saying it happens all the time, but just the law of averages says that those mannequins had to have come to life before. You know, it's been like years. It's been decades. I'm not saying all the time, but like law of averages, like maybe a day or two, they came to life.
There's a two-part documentary about this.
Yeah. Mannequin. Mannequin 2, Mannequin on, 2. On the move.
On the move. On the move.
Gripping. gripping stuff.
All right. Moving right along to Tasker Street and a stop at the Dolphin Tavern on Broad and Tasker. This place is actually an icon. Known all over the world, any sailor between 1950 through the 1990s has heard about the Dolphin from a shipmate somewhere overseas. For years, it was a nudie bar before being shut down in 2012. Half a year later, in March 2013, developer-restaurateur Avram Hornick reopened the doors, having left much of the original character of the dive bar intact, but upgrading things like the beer selection, entertainment, and the gorgeous neon sign that arcs across the facade. I love this one because it's not an actual dolphin, but the way the sign arcs and crosses itself at the top evokes like the image of a dolphin tail, and I think that's what's like so great about this one.
And it's supposed to like be for like the Navy Yard, like people who worked at the Navy Yard, sailors, and like come up Broad Street, and oh here, it's just like one of those like old timey things that to lure sailors into a. a place. I don't know.
The siren song of the dolphin.
Like, yeah, it's old as time, you know?
Yeah, man.
So that was like sailors knew about that?
Yeah, it was definitely,
sailor's
bar.
Yeah, it was a sailor bar.
When I was a teenager, it was big because that's where they would serve us. not me, because I look like I'm 14 now, but other people would buy beer there.
I always liked going to the Dolphin. I only went to it once after it changed hands. It's more of a dance club now, which I was not prepared for when I went in. It was a lot of fog machines.
Yeah,
not
a lot of fog.
So they moved the billiard table out. I'm sure a lot of sailors were confused. What do they call it? Belle and Sebastian hang out there, and not so much grizzled old dudes from the Philadelphia Experiment.
Why you gotta pick on Belle and Sebastian?
I'm not picking on them. They literally did hang out there.
Shut up.
Is that true?
When it relaunched, Balanced Bastion DJ'd a set there. And Zito's referring to that, and I'm pretty sure. And he's mentioning them because he knows I love them.
Yeah, you do.
But in a negative light, I get it.
No, I don't. There's no criticism. Balanced Bastion and Fog Machines. That's some people's thing.
Look, South Philly's number one Balanced Bastion fan. All right, right here, baby.
Made fun of me for liking Steely Dan, but like Balanced Sebastian is like Steely Dan's like heavy metal compared to Balanced Sebastian.
go tuck your t-shirt into your jeans, baby. All right.
I'm doing it. I'm 33, I'm 32, and I love it.
Go balance your checkbook, Dad.
Yeah. Salt's on sale.
I also like that the dolphin has the sign over the door and the sign instead of a window, it has another sign. I like that, the dolphin is written in this 1950s font all over the place. It definitely has great branding.
Yeah, I used to live across the street, and it was great.
Good times.
You could see it from my house. And
you went to the dolphin every day.
Yeah, no, I don't
know. Okay, just up the street, there's a similar story behind the Boot and Saddle's Boot and Saddle sign. The Boot and Saddle began life as a country western bar back in the 1950s, but had closed down and sat vacant for decades. The intricately shaped relic that has adorned this tavern since the 1950s was in seriously bad shape when Avram Hornick, who just reopened the Dolphin Tavern, decided to revamp Boot and Saddle into a more modern drinkery and live music spot. A condition of his takeover, however, was the restoration of the neon-clad boot. I actually happened to be driving by when they were taking it down. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Beautiful sign. Big old boot.
And I woke up, like, I lived on Broad Street, and I woke up real early this Sunday morning, and they were driving it. I saw them driving it back on a flatbed truck after they, after it was, like,
that's restored. Cool. That's cool. You know, it's funny, too, because a boot, a country western spot, and a dolphin are, like, the most foreign imagery of urban Philadelphia.
Yeah, you're right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And like
cowboys and dolphins.
There's definitely selling something that is not really for sale.
Yeah, I mean, I remember it for years just being in disrepair. You're walking up and down Broad Street doing whatever you're doing, and it always stuck out as the weirdest thing. I didn't understand how this thing existed to begin with. I still don't. I had no idea there was such a country western scene in 1950s Philadelphia. So much so that they bought a giant neon sign to attract people from blocks and blocks away.
Buck Owens played there.
Wow, really?
I don't know. Probably.
I don't think it was a live music venue before this. Everything that I had read was that it was a bar in the theme of country western, music. I guess they had a jukebox full of the stuff or whatever.
Sarsaparilla.
Yes. Yep.
That's a thing.
Yep. The sign came back with all of its lights blazing nearly 8 months after it was taken down from the facade of the music club at Ellsworth Street.
It looked great, like when they fixed it up.
Yeah, they brought it back. It looked awesome. The stainless steel structure, which is literally shaped like a giant cowboy boot and attached to the building by a horse saddle, has been completely renovated and outfitted with new neon tubes by Len Davidson, a neon expert who supervised the repairs. I never noticed it was a saddle connecting it to the building either. Without the neon accents to give you like the lines inside the saddle, I didn't realize that the boot and saddle sign was a boot and a saddle as a kid.
Well, I guess it was always in bad shape.
Yeah, it's
when it reopened, I think that was the first time I've ever remembered it being open in my life. I mean, I don't know when it technically closed. I don't know if you said it.
It said it closed in the 80s.
80s, yeah. I never...
And it closed again. It closed last year.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah. But it's renovated. I don't know. It'll open back up, and no one's going to be like, get rid of this, this country this crap.
Now lit in brilliant hues of pink, blue, green, and yellow with white letters, the two-story tall sign can be seen from blocks away. While the goal was to be faithful to the original design, Davidson said some guesswork was required. Quote, 10% we had to improvise, he said. It was just in that bad a shape. Like I'm saying, the shape of the saddle was a shape, but who knew, you know what I mean? Like there's all this intricate design work in there that gives like the saddle its you know, its swoop and its handle and the foot holster or whatever. So
Spurs.
Well, I think those are the parts on your boot.
You said they opened in the 50s. It was probably sailors went there too, right? Like it's probably like a strip, right?
It's got to be. It has to be to attract people from out of town, and it's a military town, so you know you can see it from blocks and blocks away. That's the kind of bar I want to go to, you know?
Sure. Like, just assuming like they're not from the city, they're probably a cowboy.
Or they love dolphins.
Or you're all into being sailors, so here's some sailor stuff.
Yeah, I also remember the old sign had like these two marquees that kind of came out and met at the heel of the boot, and like it said like country western dancing, and it also had like a martini glass on it, and that's like that was not part of the restoration.
Right.
But, I definitely remember that as well.
Oh, you know what? They might have put it inside the place too, because inside they have like a lot of the old decor.
Oh, that's cool.
I remember when they opened, Zito wanted the line dance there, and they told him he couldn't, and he got thrown out.
They kicked me out. They kicked me in my cowboy boots and my cowboy hat, my 10-gallon hat, right out of there.
He ordered a milk.
Yeah. No sugar. A hot milk. No
hot
sugar.
Milk in a dirty glass.
Like a real cowboy.
Like a cowboy.
So you might be wondering what'll happen to the sign after now we just talked about it, boot and saddle is closed. You might be asking what's going to happen to the sign. It'll likely stick around just as it did for the decades before in its latest incarnation. Property records show that the building...
You don't buy the boot and saddle to get rid of the sign. I mean, come on.
The people who...
It's a load-bearing sign.
The having it reopened and as a bar... And keeping the sign was contingent on the people trying to reopen the bar, not the building owner. So I guess he can do whatever he wants with it. Property records show that the building located at 1131 South Broad Street is owned by Frank Della Borello. He is related to the Country Western Bar's original founder, Pete Del Borello. The Del Borellos say that they have the final say, obviously, but they say that they don't have any plans to remove the sign and, quote, it will remain attached to the building for as long as we can, end quote. So,
good.
I guess they're hoping somebody will come back in and open another bar.
Let's open a bar.
So we talked about all kinds of great neon signs, and we mentioned Len Davidson, who restored the boot and saddle sign. He runs the Philly Neon Museum, and Trove and I actually visited his home. Trove mentioned it earlier, and we'd seen his private collection, which includes the old Buster Brown neon sign from 4th and South. I remember that one from...
That's a legendary sign.
Yeah.
Did your shoe have a boy inside? Old ads. We love them.
And he also has the original Pat Steak neon sign.
How big is it?
It's huge. It's massive.
That's
how big
cool.
Is this museum?
Well, at the time when Trove and I went there, it was in his home. He was curating all
yeah,
of
this. Yeah, we're like... I was like, hey, I'm trying to rent a neon. He's like, oh, come to my museum. And it was his house.
Come in my basement.
Yeah, it was his house. And he, went to his house. And it was like, oh, okay. And now, but now it's not. It's in North Philly, right?
Yeah, if you want to check it out, some of these neon masterpieces, visit Len Davidson's Neon Museum of Philadelphia, located at 1800 North American Street in the Next Fab Studio. It features over 120 vintage art pieces displayed throughout the building. There's also another 30 pieces at the Satellite Annex in Drexel University's Firestone building.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
It's a lot of neon.
Yeah.
There's more to them than you realize, you know? There's a beautiful art to it.
I checked their website right before we started podcast and started recording. They're open for tours now. I guess they're doing limited capacity. You got to wear a mask, but you can schedule things. They're doing a few a day. So check it out. It's something to do.
Let's go and try to drink the neon.
Drink? No. You sniff it. You inhale it.
It's a gas.
Yeah. And through an interview with Len, he gives credit to the most famous designer in Philadelphia of these neon signs, the guy who actually did make the Pat Steak's original Pat Steak's neon sign. The business was called Ajax Signs, a partnership between Joe Feldman and Alan Hopkins.
Alan Hopkins, yeah. He's huge in the sign community.
Big name in neon. Not much is known about Al except that he was a terrific artist. We know a little bit more about Joe. Joe
mysterious.
Yeah, Al liked to keep it mysterious.
He was all about the neon. He wasn't about the fame and you know the bullshit that comes with being a neon entrepreneur.
Right.
He just wanted he was all about the art.
He was more like Banksy, and he was like just trying to remain anonymous.
Yeah.
like Joe.
Kiss.
Like.
I know you don't bring up Kiss anymore, but I just did.
Joe Fieldman, however, was known for his endless ideas and his excessive style, always adding more neon, always trying to go bigger. Joe was a perfectionist, and apparently that made him kind of difficult to deal with. So I guess, you know, people would hire him, and then things would get, like, more and more expensive, and then he would lose that job or whatever. But that didn't necessarily stop the proliferation of his work. Columbia Avenue had so many of his pieces that it was called Ajax Row. One of the legendary Columbia Avenue pieces was for a bar called the Red Robin, in which a bird bobbed its head up and down into a cocktail glass.
That's pretty cool.
Nice. A drunk bird.
Yeah, you've seen that parodied, that neon sign parodied elsewhere in cartoons and stuff, and, like, he made one. And I couldn't find any pictures of it, but...
True artist.
Commercial art is art.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Most of the time. Sometimes?
Sometimes. I don't know. Worked on some crap over the years.
So that's pretty much all I have for the neon signs around town. Do you guys have anything you want to add? Any other signs you want to talk about that we didn't mention?
You put me on the spot.
Oh, the Hard Rock Cafe, the giant guitar that moves.
That one's funny.
Its strings are neon.
Yep.
Yeah. I always wanted to have a neon commissioned of like a UFO like abducting the Liberty Bell.
That's cool.
And, I always like had this plan to make it, and we never really had the space or like the money to buy an animated neon. But maybe someday you'll see.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That'd be awesome.
All right, well, put on a list.
Trove for my wedding. Trove did buy me a new age neon. It's an LED neon. It's a giant rose. It's beautiful.
Yes, kiss from a rose.
However, neon enthusiasts don't. It's very controversial because that's not truly neon, and a lot of they look down on you, frankly.
They're looking down on me? I was just trying to join. Yeah. I was just trying to be part of it. I was just trying to join them.
LED?
Fun.
No, it's neon. Mm-hmm. It's not the same.
They use a lot less electricity, you know.
Yeah, they're more environmentally friendly.
Boo.
Well, maybe in the future they'll look back on our LED. Neon lights are neon lights
like,
made with
they
LEDs.
Were pioneers.
Yeah, and think that you know this is the cool retro thing.
Every subculture has its snobbery. That's why it's a subculture.
Okay, that's pretty much all there is to know about crazy vintage signs. Please check out our website, www.southfellini.com. That's SOUTHFELLINI.com for cool Philly-inspired merch. Check us out on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We're at South Fellini everywhere. Follow along and join the conversation. We want to hear from you. If there's a favorite neon sign of yours or a sign we left off the list that you want to talk about or you know something about one of the signs that we didn't, please reach out to us.
Or if you ever like drank the neon or sucked it, let us know.
Inhaled it.
Did it change your voice?
Look out for new episodes of the podcast every Monday. Stay safe, wash your hands, wear a mask.
It's a gas.